Good morning, and welcome to a special meeting of the Public Safety. I am Chair Tom Amiano, representing San Francisco. We may be joined by Assemblywoman Skinner this morning. I wanted to thank all of you. I have a prepared statement, but before I do that, I want to thank all of you for your interest. As you know, BART has been let's just say, in the middle of a maelstrom in the past few months. If I may put out a biased opinion, it could have been prevented. And one of the reasons that I'm having this hearing today, aside from the unusual flood of interest on the part of my constituents in regard to BART, is about a year ago, we did propose some legislation here that was, in my mind, a watered-down version of something that would have been more effective in and around Oscar Grant, but also in terms of police practices that have been going on for quite a while. I was first interested in BART and their police force in the early 90s as a supervisor. And the unfortunate incidences that have happened since then lead me to believe that, and I'll know more after today's hearing, lead me to believe that either some of the recommendations have not been followed and or that there's been some delay in the appointment of police auditor, which was what finally was decided on. That happened on the, I think, the very same week that there was the unfortunate killing of the homeless individual. As you know, the only good news for BART lately has been, I guess, they have a new director who we welcome, and I do plan to meet with individually. That you're going to get new seat covers, I guess. But while I am focused, really, more in terms of a report back, how's it gone this past year? And what is the status of the recommendations made by Noble and other police evaluators? There has been the issue of the cell phones being cut off, and what does that mean for free speech? And then a scripted press conference about the strengths of BART, which also caused a stir. And then lately, the other incidences that have happened in and around BART, I'd say that the BART board has a big challenge here. You know, I'm not adversarial. I don't want to be punitive. But you know, I do represent a public who wants to know, should there even be a BART police force? And should they be armed? And that will be on the table. And the actuation of what we do with that legislatively will, you know, depend on the outcome of today. One shot doesn't do it. I know that. So we would like, my office would like to be in continuous communication with BART. As you know, the San Francisco Police Department are also doing an investigation, which is not finished yet. I did talk to the police chief, and he had his investigator communicate with my office. And when they finish that investigation, it will go to the district attorney, who will then rule on whether or not there was any criminal activity or other reasons to pursue charges. So that's still hanging fire. And we have a number of meetings scheduled with the different stakeholders, but also the strong possibility that we would have another hearing such as this. I think that keeping my door open is probably going to be a very positive thing. I'm not looking for any, as I mentioned, any kind of revenge, but there are very serious issues that have been brought up, and if there are solutions, so that the repeat of some of the things that have happened can be prevented, then it's definitely worth the effort. I have a format today that I'd like to explain. We're going to have a number of panels, three to be exact, or at least two, and then a public comment section. So the second panel is going to be on the progress report on the recommendations of the 2009 Noble audit of the Bar Police Department. And we're going to have the Bar General Manager and also Mr. Rainey, the Chief of Police. And I think that you've been very attentive to my comments. And so now I'd like to return the favor. And if the Chief and the General Manager could come up to the table, you are most welcome. And we're very grateful that you're here. And if you wanted to make opening remarks, each of you, and then we'll try to be as informal as possible. I'll have some questions for you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I am Grace Krunikin, and as you know, I joined BART as its general manager earlier this month. Prior to joining BART, I have served as staff to the U.S. Senate Transportation Appropriations Committee. I was a presidential management intern with the U.S. Department of Transportation and Policy and Budget. I've served 3 years as the federal deputy of the Federal Transit Administration, 8 years with the City of Portland in transportation, ending as the deputy director. I was the director of the State of Oregon for 5 years, and most recently the director of transportation for the City of Seattle. I appreciate the opportunity to address the Assembly Public Safety Committee this morning and to assure you that I strongly share your belief in the need for accountability by the BART Police Department. Throughout my career, accountability has been and continues to be a major priority. I have expressed my commitment to performance accountability to all of the executives that report to me within the BART administration. The Noble recommendations were a result of a top-to-bottom management audit of the BART Police Department. The report authors acknowledge that the recommendations would be implemented over several years. I was pleased to learn the progress in implementing the Noble recommendations is being tracked by the BART Board of Directors Police Department Review Committee. Chief Rainey currently delivers progress reports twice a year to the BART Board of Directors that sit on the review committee, and I have asked that I receive monthly reports on their recommendations, on the report's recommendations and implementation. And the chief also provides monthly reports to the Citizen Review Board as well. Finally, I believe that the citizen oversight of the police department is essential to providing greater police transparency and accountability. I both welcome and appreciate the commitment and efforts of BART's independent police auditor and Citizen Review Board in providing an independent review of the policies, procedures, and practices of the BART Police Department. I'd now like to ask Chief Rainey to take over.
Thank you very much, General Manager. Chief?
Good morning. My name is Kenton Rainey, and I'm the Chief of Police of the San Francisco Bay Area Rapid Transit District. It is both a pleasure and honor to appear before the Public Safety Committee on behalf of BART and update you on our progress of implementing the Noble audit recommendations. I was hired by the district in June of 2010, and using the Noble audit as my guide, I've been systematically implementing the recommendations from that report to transition the organization forward in a new direction. I would like to take this opportunity to highlight six successful initiatives we have implemented since I have been chief. One, the Noble audit recommended the general orders manual needed a total revision, and we have accomplished that. Working with Lexapro in January of 2011, we adopted our new policy and procedures manual. Lexapro provides standardized, updated policy and procedures for law enforcement agencies throughout the state of California. Their comprehensive manual starts with over 140 individual policies based on latest statutory law, case law, and best practices. Going forward, all new policy and procedures or edits to existing policies will be vetted through our Citizen Review Board before they are issued out of my office. Two, the Noble audit indicated that BART PD needs to develop and implement a comprehensive pre-service in-service, specialized and advanced training plan in alignment with the BART Police mission. Working through our training committee, we have developed a training plan. As a result of our plan, we have been successful in providing more training to our personnel in the following areas. Post-continued professional training. All California peace officers are required to complete 24 hours of what we call CPT every 2 years. At BART PD, we require our officers to complete 40 hours of CPT every year. This year, CPT includes courses in arrest and control, defensive tactics, ethical decision-making, incident response to terrorist bombings, first aid, use of the tasers, electronic and projectile weapons. Last year's CPT training included the following courses: ethical decision-making, racial profiling, communicating with the youth, range and impact weapons, customer loyalty, crowd control, driving and force option simulations in the range. Crisis intervention training. CIT is a community partnership working with mental health consumers and family members. CIT encourages communities, families, law enforcement officers, and mental health professionals to act as a compass for consumers of mental health. The goal is to set a standard of excellence for our officers with respect to treatment of individuals with mental illness. An increase in illegal narcotic and alcohol abuse and the deinstitutionalization of mentally ill citizens has caused many to become homeless and potentially more violent, which increases the chance for involvement with law enforcement. CIT provides our personnel with additional tools on how to possibly de-escalate these confrontations. Over the past year, as a direct or indirect result of mental illness, we have taken approximately 3 individuals a day into custody because they could not care for their own safety or the safety of others. All of our field training officers, which are 24, have received 40 hours of CIT training within the last year. By the end of October of this year, we will have trained an additional 20 officers in CIT response. Leadership development and succession planning. Effective succession planning assists employees in leadership development, which includes police supervision, management education, seminars, and conference opportunities to enhance the skills and professional knowledge of law enforcement officers. Over the past year, our future leaders have either completed or enrolled in the following premier law enforcement training courses. 2 of our personnel have completed the California Post Command College. 3 of our personnel have completed the Police Executive Research Forum Senior Management Institute of Policing through the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. 4 of our personnel have completed the California Post Role of the Police Chief course. And 4 of our personnel are currently enrolled in the California Post Supervisory Leadership Institute, also known as SLI. 3, the Noble Audit recommended that we incorporate various policies with specified practices governing the use of force into a single comprehensive policy. In addition, it was also recommended that we develop a reporting system that ensures all incidents involving the application of force are well documented and the salient facts surrounding the event noted. This has been implemented and is part of the BPD culture. We have specific policy that defines what we consider a use of force. A supervisor must respond to a scene of all incidents of use of force, conduct an investigation, and submit a use of force report regarding that event. The investigation examines the circumstances that led up to the use of force, and all other actions taken regarding that incident are then reviewed throughout our chain of command. I review that report as well before I forward to Internal Affairs for final disposition. 4, the Noble Audit recommended that the department needs to establish and coordinate a community outreach program with a clear champion. Under my leadership, the department has adopted the community-oriented policing and problem-solving philosophy as our crime control strategy, also known as COPS. COPS is a philosophy or a management style and organizational design that promotes police stakeholder partnerships and proactive problem solving. As a result, I have reached out and established a cooperative working relationship with the following important stakeholder groups: the ACLU, the NAACP, local Bay Area ministers, the Oscar Grant Foundation. There is also a specialized COPS unit that works directly out of my office that has done work with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Special Olympics, in local Bay Area restaurants' Tip a Cop program. 5, the Noble audit lists another major area of concern is our handling of internal affairs complaints. Their internal review could only find 13 documented internal affairs complaints for all of 2008 for BPD. This appeared to be a low number of complaints for an agency the size of BART. Since the audit, we have revamped the way we receive and investigate citizens' complaints as illustrated in our 2010 BART Police Internal Affairs Annual Report, which I have provided copies for your review. We have adopted a new policy on how complaints are received. Complaint forms have been made available at all our report locations. We are placing complaint forms at the station agents' booths. As a result of our efforts, we received 66 complaints in 2010. 6, and finally, the Noble audit recommended that BPD adopt a more traditional police disciplinary system, which we have done. The goal of any disciplinary system is to teach, instruct, or train. This begins with a performance evaluation system where employees receive feedback from their supervisor. BPD personnel receive face-to-face feedback from their supervisor quarterly. All line-level employees receive biannual written performance evaluations. Performance evaluations are taken into consideration when selecting individuals for lateral and vertical promotions. Finally, we have implemented a computerized early warning record system with specific benchmarks that indicate when an employee may be experiencing performance problems. That concludes my written testimony, and I'm now prepared to go into more detail and answer any questions or concerns that any member of the Public Safety Committee might have.
Well, thank you very much, Chief and General Manager. I appreciate your remarks, and I'm very happy to receive this as well. You know, full disclosure here, I had a piece of legislation that I thought would, just in the parlance of everyday life, would have some teeth to it. I didn't get that. I got what the current legislation is. You got what the current legislation is. That's water under the bridge. But full disclosure, depending on all the input that we get here today and probably a little extra, I'm going to be doing a side-by-side comparison as to what I thought was a very effective piece of legislation as opposed to what did get passed, which, you know, the mantra was, well, it's better than nothing. And, you know, given the incendiary nature of some of the perceptions around BART police, that did make sense. It did resonate. It wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't what a lot of constituents wanted. But, of course, we went with it. Sometimes it comes down to a numbers game. And that had the votes and did get the signature of the governor. I think the input that we get today and how we assess it and from other quarters will shape our side-by-side comparison. You know, if we had had the legislation with the teeth, would this have still happened or not? So some of that is not science, as you know, but you know, I want to give BART as much slack as possible, but at the same time, you know, if there are needs for improvement and for more adherence to recommendations, it may in fact that take something with teeth. We might come up with that conclusion. But in the meantime, I would like to get very specific with you, Chief and General Manager, about some of the recommendations and what your estimate is in the year that they've passed. So the first one is the Noble report, and you referred to some of this, but I think it's better to pull it out now, indicated there was no representative group which looked at the documents, the department's big picture. So has a training committee that represents all major units of the agency been established, and what progress has this committee made?
Senator, the answer to that question is yes, we do have a training committee. The department has been reorganized into 3 divisions, and we have pulled individuals from each of those divisions and established that training committee that looks at that big picture that you talked about, that you're questioning about. That committee has met 3 times over the past year since I've been chief. They were the ones who actually developed the current training plan. That plan corresponds with each of the major specialized positions within the organization, and they've outlined what they consider essential, desirable, and mandatory training for each of those positions. In addition, that training committee also looks at our continued professional training that we deliver each year to all of our personnel, and they give input on that coursework or what should be trained on in each of the following years.
Okay, and then, you know, on the crisis intervention training, the CIT, I was instrumental in San Francisco in getting some classes, et cetera, you know, for officers in and around mental health issues, because like all police forces, we are forced to face with that. It's another demand, it's another skill, and of course there's always been incidences that were high profile. And initially, the police chief at the time said, well, I don't know, you know, if we could do this, et cetera. There was little pushback. We finally reached a accord, and the classes are oversubscribed because many officers are very interested in what they might do in a situation where there is a mental health issue and there might be use of force and what's appropriate. Were the officers who were involved with the homeless individual, had they taken those 40 hours with the CIT?
No, the officers that were involved in the incident on July 3rd were not.
Okay, would they have been ordinarily scheduled for that?
Currently, they would have eventually received that training. We started off with our initially with our field training officers because they are the ones who indoctrinate all our new personnel.
Right, right. So the next thing the Noble report noted that there's been a lot of effort expended to firearm training, but no defensive tactics trainings have been conducted at the time of that report, which is a year ago. So what is being done about defensive tactics training? Maybe you could also explain briefly to the layman what defensive tactics training is, although if you're a parent, you probably know what that is already. But
and yes, I am a parent, and I do understand defensive tactics. Defensive tactics is basically skills that you use in order to possibly take someone into custody without having to use some type of deadly force. It could be with your hands, it could be with OC spray, a taser, or your baton. But generally what we call command presence, and that's your bearing when you come into a situation, most skilled officers, for the most part, are able to talk someone into custody without having to use force. What we have done in the last year, under our continual professional training on the defensive tactics, we've given 10 hours of arrest and control, defensive tactic techniques, ethical decision making regarding use of force, and also we've gone to a mandatory carry of the taser, whereas before it was optional, and all our personnel have received an additional 10 hours of training on this as well.
Okay. But the and I know you weren't here, but with the Oscar Grant tragedy, one of the defense responses was confusion between reaching for the taser and the weapon. So these extra 10 hours on, because you're mandating the tasers, and then accompanying that would be 10 hours more training with that. Do you think, based on your experience, that would help minimize the purported confusion under stress of reaching for the wrong instrument?
Yes, and the 10 hours is ongoing. It's not just a one-time shot training. In addition, we've gone from quarterly firearms training to bi-monthly firearms training, where we actually have incorporated transitioning through all the various weapons on an officer's duty belt, along with utilizing their firearm, so we can eliminate or lessen the chance of that type of confusion.
And then in terms of jurisdiction, you know, since BART is really a district, for instance, in San Francisco, right now there's a discussion, I'm being euphemistic, around use of tasers or not. So is there any jurisdictional conflict if the BART police have a mandate for a taser and San Francisco police don't? Is there any, do you see any problem there in terms of interpretation of an incident or?
None. Each individual department is governed by their own policy and procedures manual. And as far as I know, San Francisco does not have tasers at all.
Right. Yeah, for now. Yeah. Okay. You're just thinking of the training then would be also disparate in terms of the two police forces. So at least in San Francisco. Okay. And then in the use of force recommendation, the assessment team recommended that the agency's use of deadly force policy training ensures that all sworn officers receive annual training addressing the legal justification of the use and that there be a method for tracking and mandating attendance at the training. And to what extent has that been accomplished?
In our 40 hours of continued professional training, as I previously stated, all our officers are receiving ethical decision-making regarding use of force. But in addition, we have developed a training calendar where all our personnel go through what we call roll call training, where they go over our critical policies, and use of force and use of deadly force are one of those or two of those critical policies, where they actually have to they become part of a discussion with their supervisor, and where the supervisor facilitates those discussions regarding those policies and procedures, and employees have to sign acknowledging that they receive that roll call training and that they understand the policy.
And then what would be the consequence of not attending trainings?
Because this is a monthly training calendar, they would be caught up at some other time.
Uh-huh. And then if they continued, I mean, is there a consequence?
We actually
them?
I guess, again, because it's a monthly ongoing training, unless the person was out for a year, as soon as they came back, we would put them into some type of training program. We actually had that occur where...
Would you have them in the field?
No. We would put them in retraining as I was getting ready to say, we actually had a person that was out for an extended period of time. And when we brought them back, we have actually created a post-training academy of 160 hours. And we would put that individual through that 160 hours of training to refamiliarize them with what we want and expect from them.
And actually, that's a good segue to my next question, because one of the recommendations was that you have a post-training established, and it looks like you've done that.
Yes.
And, you know, when the officers are attending the training, does that affect what's happening in the field in terms of numbers? In other words, you're sitting in a training for an hour or two. Obviously, you're not assigned to the field, but all that deployment and rotation and all is all. You'll never feel that you're going to be caught short, in other words.
Well, as far as our CPT training, the continual professional training, it definitely impacts our bottom line. It's extremely labor-intensive and costly to pull somebody out of the field to attend 40 hours of training. However, the district has appropriated this additional funding in order for us to do this, and we backfill behind those individuals on overtime. So as far as our minimum staffing levels are not in jeopardy.
And then those individuals on OT, they've had this training.
If they haven't had the training, they will be scheduled to attend that training at some point during the year.
Okay. And then the report indicated that the department did not have a written directive detailing the standards for training attendance. The recommendation of Noble was to establish a written directive. So has the department developed a comprehensive written directive that establishes the standing for training attendants?
Yes, we actually do have that under our training policy, where all employees assigned to attend training, there's a requirement and expectation that they do attend. The policy actually lists the five reasons that a person can be excused from the training, but the second part of that, if a person is excused, that they're supposed to work with our training unit and their supervisor to reschedule when they're supposed to attend that training, and that is all tracked by our training unit.
Okay. And in terms of the report's recommendation that the system for updating the individual training records was wholly inadequate. BART was recording the records in three separate databases, a post system, an intranet system, and a TMS system, that there was a recommendation for a minimum replacing the TMS system with a commercial database. And Noble has also recommended the department only maintain one in-house repository rather than two. So I guess you might call that streamlining. So what progress has been made in that area for maintaining the training records?
We are currently migrating our records over from our Access database into TMS. I have 32 years of law enforcement experience, 22 years in Southern California, and last assignment that I had before I retired from the Sheriff's Department in Southern California, I ran a California Post Academy. We use TMS. It's a great system if it's properly networked and the users know how to use it. We had a networking problem. We have moved to a new training facility, and our IT has solved for that training problem, and we are now currently inputting all our records into TMS, and that should be completed within the next month or two.
So the difference between what you've done and I think to get it clear, the recommendation was to at minimum delete the TMS, but you've kept it, but you've also followed the directive of having a one central.
We're going to streamline everything into TMS.
And because of your experience as well, you were more comfortable with it.
Yes.
I think that makes perfect sense. In terms of the use of force, is there now a single comprehensive policy? Because the recommendation said it was rather scattered.
Yes, there is
confusion.
A single, there's
definitely with the Oster Grant, you can see it on the tapes.
There is definitely one single use of force policy.
Okay. And we wanted to welcome Assemblyman Skinner. And Ms. Skinner, we've just been looking at the recommendations of Noble and Post of the BART Police and getting a response from our new police chief and general manager as to the status of those recommendations. One thing that just occurred to me now, and a little tangential, but I don't want to forget it, an incident that happened in Orange County recently with a homeless individual. It's attracted a lot of attention. The officers there actually, it seemed to me, from the had cameras on their person. And do we do that? Have we entertained that? And I don't think that was part of any recommendation that I saw. But
no, it was not part of any recommendation. But I'm pleased to report that BART Police Department is currently beta testing the VView camera. That's the body camera where this device, when activated, it will record all audio and visual incidents, encounters involving the officer and a potential suspect. We've actually identified grant money to fully purchase cameras for all our personnel and a storage system to download all the videos.
Okay. And Assemblywoman, would you like to make any remarks?
Apologies that I didn't hear your opening presentation.
We have it.
And I know that, yes, we have it in writing, so luckily I have that. And Chairman Amiano, you've been going through this series of questions.
Yes.
And I don't know how far you've gotten in this section or not.
The use of force recommendations and where they're at, and I'd be happy to share my notes with you as well.
Great,
we've
great.
We've done some of the other recommendations and where they're at, training, great. Post-training, particularly mental health training, et cetera. And so now we're on the use of force recommendation.
Great. So I'm going to allow you to pursue some additional questions, and then I will have some of myself and some comments.
Thank you very much. I wonder if you could now give us a little background on what the reporting system that's now in place for use of force incidents, I think with the Oscar Grant tragedy, there was confusion around that too. Who tells who what? How soon do they tell it? It was a chain of command, I think.
Yes, as I stated in my opening comments on the use of force, we have a very robust use of force reporting system that whenever an officer is involved in a use of force incident, a sergeant has to immediately respond to the scene and conduct an administrative investigation surrounding that incident, including debriefing suspects that were actually who the force was used against, and also do a witness canvas for individuals who possibly witnessed that. That report is then prepared and then forwarded through our chain of command to our lieutenant watch commander, who must approve that force, and then that report is then forwarded to our operations deputy chief, who comments on the force, on whether it's justified. It's then forwarded to a use of force committee that reviews all the circumstances regarding an incident, and then they make a determination whether the force is justified. And then it comes to my office, and I read the entire report, and I make a determination on whether everything is proper, and then I send it to the Internal Affairs Division for final disposition.
Okay. You know, in terms of the, just to go back a second, in terms of all the trainings that have now been initiated, do non-police staff, can they go to those trainings and check it out? Can a member of the Bar Commission or the general manager, has that happened before? Is there any interest in that so that they get to see it?
The use of force training?
Well, either that or any of the trainings that we were talking about, you know, the post trainings, et cetera. I mean,
as the general manager, she can come to any training that she wants throughout the district.
And I know she's busy. I'm just thinking sometimes, yeah. Okay. And back to the use of force specifically, do supervisors, because there was a problem, now routinely conduct reviews when the use of force incidents occur?
Yes.
So that, and that's all documented?
Yes.
Yeah. And then what agency has been conducting the investigations in the most recent?
As far as the incident that occurred last year in July, the Oakland Police Department and the Alameda County DA's office are conducting the investigation regarding the fatal shooting of the individual, Fred Collins, that involved Bart Police Department and Oakland police officers. As far as the current incident, which occurred on July 3rd of this year, that's being investigated by the San Francisco Police Department, our independent auditor's office, and the San Francisco DA's office.
So those are, the recommendation was for outside agencies, not internal affairs. So those are the ones
our internal
you would consider outside agencies.
Yes, and our internal affairs are also, they automatically do an administrative investigation into a use of deadly force incident to determine if anything, any policy and procedures have been violated, because you can actually be ruled that the actions taken were legal and justified, and you can still be found to have violated our own internal policies and procedures.
Okay, now on to internal affairs and discipline. The Noble report found that the department had four separate written directives that governed the discipline process, and additionally the report found that many within the department characterized the process as laced with favoritism, lacking the appearance of objectivity. The process was characterized as lacking accountability. One supervisor gave the impression of most officers as, write me up, nothing's going to happen, and it'll be out of my file in 9 months. So the lack of discipline and accountability was given as a reason that officers do not routinely ride BART, rather they ride in patrol cars. Officers don't ride the system because they don't want to. Noble recommended that the department consolidate the various discipline policies into a single one, and additionally, the report recommended implementing a comprehensive early warning system, which I think that you have referred to identify officers who performances are problematic. So, and then those officers get training and counseling. You know, the little red flag goes up. So has BART at least consolidated the disciplinary materials into a singular procedure? And, you know, as someone who's been an officer for a very long time in various law enforcement disciplines, is it going to make a difference? I mean, how, no matter what the profession, but this one particularly, because it uses, it's allowed to use force, you know, how do you change that attitude? And, you know, I'm not being accusatory here. I see it in everything. People talk about teachers and tenure, and, you know, if we consolidate the procedures into a single one, which I hope is happening, but then how do you really work with the attitude?
And thank you for that question, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. We can write as many policies as we want, but the bottom line, until we deal with the attitude, nothing's going to change. And the way you do that, we have a saying in law enforcement, you get what you inspect. And any progressive disciplinary system starts with an evaluation system. And that's why we've gone to quarterly evaluations with our personnel, where they actually sit down with a supervisor on a quarterly basis and get feedback regarding their performance, how they're doing, are they meeting the expectations, so we can make mid-course corrections before we actually do the formal written evaluation. I don't know if I've answered your question.
You know, I do endorse it. I know, I mean, my main experience has been with San Francisco, that there was a time in San Francisco, 20 years ago maybe, where certain behaviors of an officer were looked upon as a good, and now we wouldn't think that, you know. And the system that has been set up, in fact, sometimes we used to take officers from Oakland and then employ them in San Francisco. Diagnostic tools being what they are, personal anecdotes, real experiences, you know, showed that some of the things that looked like they should be attributes for a good cop actually were not, you know, in the context of today's world, a good thing for a cop to do, under stress particularly. So, you know, I do endorse that heartily, and it even gets to the point where if it's a young cop and there's a little incident, it's on there not to embarrass the individual or anything, but for the superiors to say, you know, this looks like it's a pattern, so now we're going to talk to this officer, now we're going to try to give them counseling. That leads me to the other thing, which is mentoring. In all police forces now, because of the economics, et cetera, and so forth, you know, your older police officer, your more experienced police officer are laid off, or it's just not worth it to them anymore, and they quit. So there is a lack of mentoring, because, as you know, all the words and all the policies have to go through a filter. And if you have a cop who's been around for a long time and has that street wisdom, and is doing a good job, then the new man or woman doesn't get the benefit of that mentoring because of the turnover. So is that something you're experiencing, and do you have any words of wisdom around that?
2 points. I want to go back to something you asked about our disciplinary system being racked with favoritism. I can assure you, under my watch, that does not occur. Everybody's held to the same standard of accountability and the high expectations of what the district expects. Back to what we call the brain drain, where you have a stampede of officers when they reach age 50. If they've been around, they're able to retire with a pretty good pension. That is always a concern. So with our succession planning, that's why I illustrated that in my opening comments, that we are putting our officers in these very, very premier law enforcement training programs so they can hear and share experience with peers from across the state and across the country of law enforcement best practices.
Assemblywoman Skinner.
Well, I realize, Tom, that you've now sort of moved into the questioning around the internal affairs and discipline, but in the conversation that has taken place so far, I sort of returned back to training. And I wonder if the standard police officers' training is the best training program for officers in a situation like BART. Now, clearly, any public safety official encounters the issues of mental illness, the issues of homeless populations, and all. It doesn't matter what force you're on, you're going to encounter that. But it would appear to me that BART is going to encounter it in larger percent, perhaps, than other forces, because just the nature of many of our mentally ill population are also homeless, and you've got stations where, especially in inclement weather, a homeless person is going to gravitate towards, and also is going to gravitate towards being on the train itself. And you know, so it just seems to me that population, we're going to have a larger percent that officers have to encounter. And then they're also encountering them in crowded spaces and enclosed spaces. And those are very different circumstances often than what, say, your usual city officer might encounter. In addition, other incidents are almost always in a context of crowds, where if you're San Francisco, Oakland, or Berkeley PD or whatever, yes, you deal with crowds, but usually for specific events, not as a constant. And so when I look at some of the incidents that have gotten a lot of public attention, and as we know, obviously the force deals with incidents every day, and many of the incidents you deal with don't get public attention. But if we look at those that have gotten a lot of public attention, they've been in situations clearly with crowds and other ones clearly with a mentally ill population. And I wonder if, you know, rather than focusing so much on the discipline side, whether there needs to be an enhanced or a different kind of training for our officers considering the circumstances they confront.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. That's why I'm a big proponent of crisis intervention training. Been involved with CIT since 1998, and several agencies. I've been very instrumental in bringing that program to.
Explain, do you, CIT? There's so many acronyms.
I'm sorry, crisis intervention training. It's a training technique dealing with mentally ill individuals, how to de-escalate the volatility of those type of confrontations with law enforcement. It's a very enhanced special training program where officers are receiving 40 hours of training from mental health professionals, individuals from the family members, which is NOMNI, the National Alliance of the Mentally Ill. These are the family members of individuals who are possibly mentally ill. And law enforcement has specifically designed this 40-hour training program, and it's offered around the state. And after I was on the job at BART for 1 month, and we had a critical incident involving a mentally health individual with a knife along with Oakland Police Department, I did not wait, did not hesitate. I began sending our personnel to any CIT class that I could find that was post-approved around the state. And to date, we have trained all of our field training officers, which is 24, which is a lot. I'm very proud to say that within the last year, I probably trained more officers in the CIT method than any other Northern California agency. By the end of October, we will have an additional 20 additional officers trained in CIT. And one of my lieutenants was very instrumental in part of the group that developed the CIT program that's now in Alameda County, and we are also sending personnel to that.
Assemblywoman, I did ask if the officers involved in the shooting of the homeless individual
right.
had received this training, and the chief had responded that they had not yet.
Right, right. Yeah. That's partly was I wasn't here for that answer, but that was part of the purpose of my question, because it seems that given the kind of, I don't know if I'd say unique, but the very specific type of circumstances that BART officers encounter, just because of the nature of the system, that, you know, we would, I think, want to ensure that those officers had a very different kind of training and were prepared for very different circumstances so that we could lessen these kinds of incidents.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. And we're on track to continue to train all our personnel. I started with our most high-profile people, who are our field training officers, just because we're also hiring new officers, and then they can share what they've learned with new officers during our field training program. And now we're also training, giving other officers that same training opportunity. This is very labor intensive. It's very costly. And the other thing, this training is only offered so many times a year throughout the state, and everybody's clamoring to get their personnel into this class. As the chairman identified, you had the situation that happened in Fullerton. All law enforcement chiefs recognize this is a very, very volatile situation, not only for the communities that they're serving, but for the personnel that work under them, and also for the loved ones of the individuals right. that are left behind in the event, you know, that deadly force is used.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other, I want to revisit or return back to also this issue of crowd control, because, again, this is may not be accurate at all, but in my observation of some of the incidents that have occurred with the BART police, there was the circumstance of the perpetrators and the stress or tension that was created just due to the potential threat or risk that related to the perpetrators themselves, as well as that kind of increased tension or risk due to the presence of so many passengers. And of course, in most, not all, I mean, there's times when BART's ridership is lower, but, you know, at any given moment, any incident could have 100 to 500 people present. And thus, not only are the officers dealing with the circumstance of the perpetrator, but also this crowd. When you think about most city or county officers, certainly they could experience that with that number of people around, but most of the time, you know, whether it's on a street or downtown or in a neighborhood, you might have no more than, you know, 10 to 20, you know, people that either are nearby or somehow witness it, right, versus 100 to 500. And it just seemed like the pressures or perceived risks that related to the fact that the crowds were there, it's not fair to say impaired judgment, but may have affected the judgment in ways that, in hindsight, we might look at as having not been the greatest judgment. And so I also wonder how much of that whole crowd training is focused on or done within the department.
In my opening statement, I talked about some of the continuing professional training that our personnel have received. Every California police officer is required to receive at least 24 hours of training every 2 years. The district has appropriated money for our officers to receive 40 hours of training every year. Of that 40 hours, we've actually have given our officers crowd control training. In addition, I want to dispel any rumor or myth that BART officers are different from any other California law enforcement officers. Our officers attend the same academies right. that all other law enforcement officers in this state attend.
Yeah, that I know. But I guess I was raising that those academies may not focus as much on specific circumstances that BART officers you know, on a daily basis encounter that other officers may only encounter once a month or 12 times in their whole careers, whereas BART officers would encounter on a daily basis, just because during commute hours, you have phenomenal crowds always present on BART. So officers are dealing with crowds on a daily basis. Most other law enforcement officers don't experience having to deal with crowds on a daily basis.
And that's why we developed a 160-hour post-training academy for our personnel to indoctrinate them into the BART district.
And Assemblywoman Chu, one of the points we hit on is within the recommendation, it was noted that many do not ride the trains, at least that was the case. And so you do have that minimal contact even with the public, which is something else I wanted to address before we finish up with this panel. So maybe you, two things. Maybe you'd like to comment on that. Will there be more visibility of the BART police rather than the purported incidents of riding around in patrol cars? And then in terms of the crowd control, there were reports that members of our friends in the Fourth Estate were arrested. And while I might fantasize about that from time to time, could you verify if that actually did happen and why you think it did and what we might do about that? Because that's going to bring you more heartache than this panel will.
Yeah. What was the first question again?
The purported absence of...
The officers riding BART. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that was pointed out to me when I came, that that's a high priority for the district, and we have definitely put a high emphasis on making our personnel visible, to the point now that I'm getting complaints from citizens directly through via email that they saw our officer texting, or they didn't like where they were standing. And for me, that's currently a half a win, because once I get them visible, then I can direct them more as far as what they should or should not be doing, and remind them that they're always in the public eye. Regarding the incident involving the press, truly regrettable that members of the press were detained at one of the protests. But we actually do have a policy regarding media relations where we require and want the press to have their credentials very, very visibly, prominently displayed. So it eliminates any type of confusion. I'm actually meeting with the editorial board members and other news outlets tomorrow, because I understand, respect, and I want them to cover what we're doing, to show.
Not be scripted.
I agree. I definitely want them again.
I think it goes back to Assemblywoman's point about crowd control and experience with crowd control and the stresses of that, and that there could very well be media present. And that's training, but it's on-the-job training, too, as well. You know, about the use of force, just one more thing. What does the Internal Affairs Division currently do in response to use of force procedures?
Whenever there's a use of force, the supervisor responds to the scene, does an investigation, generates a use of force report that he or she sends directly to our Internal Affairs Division, and then he also sends one through the chain of command to be reviewed through the chain of command. I've had instances where before it's gotten to my desk, a use of force incident, where Internal Affairs have gotten the report, and they've come to me and said to alert me that this is a problem with this report, and this is something that maybe we need to do a more formal investigation. In addition, when I get a use of force report, if I don't agree with the recommendations from the various levels of other review, I can send that to Internal Affairs.
Your judgment.
Yes.
And then if there's use of force but without a weapon, then that's dealt with in the same manner.
These are all use of force with
without
a weapon.
Without a weapon. And I'm assuming that you get some funding for Homeland Security. Is that right?
Yes.
And does that could that kick in for some of the funding for the trainings, particularly around mental health issues, you know, if you're caught short or in terms of money?
I'm sure we could petition Homeland Security, TSA, for that, but it's not necessarily at this point. The district has made a commitment to training, and very, very commendable. I've worked in a 32-year law enforcement career. I've worked in 5 different agencies. This is the first agency that has not told me to cut my budget.
Okay. Well, we have to be grateful for small favors. In addition to the aspect of the crowd control and then the perception that the officers are somewhat cut off from interacting with the public, one of the noble recommendations was that there be, because because it is a transit system and there's a lot of turnover, et cetera, that community outreach be vastly improved, et cetera. So have we taken those steps? Or?
Yes. As I said, we've adopted the COP strategy as our crime control strategy, which requires us to work with our stakeholders in order to COPS is community-oriented policing and problem-solving. It requires us to work with our stakeholders in order to ensure the safety of our commuters and through the system. And the way we do that is by mutual agreement of what's important to our stakeholders in the district.
I was thinking, I think one of the noble recommendations was around customer service and community involvement, so which would be important, I think.
All our personnel have received the COPS training where I utilize a former captain that used to work for me in Southern California. I brought him up there, and he instructed them in this technique. And also in our continued professional training, as I mentioned in my opening statement, our personnel have received customer service training.
And then in terms of the complaint process, and, you know, we are going to have the civilian oversight on the next panel. But initially, I think at the time, you could only get it on the BART website, and I think it was only in English. Have we taken steps yet to improve that?
Yes.
The complaint process, the accessibility of the forms, and
yes,
being intimidated when you come in. And
The complaint forms are accessible on the website. We're putting them in the Station Nation booths. We're putting complaint forms at all our report locations, and we're currently in the process of translating the complaint forms into 3 additional languages.
You know, when they last week, I guess they did an assessment of the Oakland Police Force, and one of the things that was mentioned was they actually had statistics about use of force and when weapons were used, how many times, and then they came to some conclusion that 23% of the time it wasn't appropriate. But do we have that kind of data?
I think it's contained in the annual report.
We just got that, so I just, yeah.
Okay. And if it's not, I'm sure that we can break that down.
Okay, well, I was going to say in terms of myself, in terms of closing, you know, I appreciate all your observations, you know, and they're going to go into the hopper. You know, we're going to hear from some others. I think we'll probably be a little more critical. But again, I am doing this comparison to the legislation. You know, these things become very important to legislators. But anyway, and if the legislation I had written would have a more salubrious effect than the legislation that is now in process. And, you know, frankly, I'm open. You know, listening to you, it seems to me, you know, the first plie for man, the grand jeté, first step, it seems that you are doing that. And I know you're both new, which is gives me hope, but is also frustrating because the assembly member can tell you when you're investigating whatever it is and someone gets up and says, you know, I'd like to help you, but I've only been there 2 months. We don't want that to be a conversation stopper. And, you know, whether, you know, we come up with a whole new piece of legislation or some tweaks, you know, based on input and based on anecdotal, you know, it's totally open. And I think the communication between the committee members, particularly those who represent BART districts, you know, needs to continue so that we do the absolute right thing here. It was very, very difficult with the last incident. Just to give you a personal take, we were worried that the legislation that's now in effect could lead to another shooting. We didn't want that to happen. We're very, very concerned about that. And so when it did happen, you know, naturally our fallback was, and you know, we all need to police ourselves, so that's why I'm having this hearing too, is see, if we had had the teeth in that, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Well, it's a maybe. You know, it's a Monday morning quarterbacking thing. I don't want to get into the blame game, but it just certainly seems for years there has been neglect of this issue. And even some of my colleagues, duly elected colleagues of the BART board, have not always felt they could address some of the issues that I brought up as a supervisor, including a civilian review. And civilian review is always a very prickly issue. And, you know, there are those who lobby here in Sacramento who find that anathema and think that what San Francisco has is going to bring down the house on all police forces. And it's not about that. It is about accountability and transparency. And we don't want the fox guarding the hen house. So my final thought on this is we still have a long ways to go, but I'm encouraged by your sense of cooperation and commitment. And we will keep talking, maybe perhaps even have another hearing. And if any legislation does come out of what we find out, we'll certainly, of course, work with you. So I wanted to thank you very much, and I don't know if somebody would.
Well, obviously, BART is in a word I should use. It's been a very difficult year, and unfortunately, the subsequent incidences, I mean, clearly the focus on from the Oscar Grant incident was, you know, not beneficial to BART, was not beneficial to BART's community relations. But, you know, many things were done to help put BART in better standing with the community and in better standing just in relationship to its ridership, its officers, and all. And yet the recent incidents, I think, were a big setback. I certainly appreciate, and as I mentioned about the crowd issues, I certainly appreciate why BART wanted to ensure that those kind of random protests that were occurring did not endanger the riders. And, of course, they were occurring during commute hour. I think that the decision to cut off the cell phones, that there were various responses that really weren't appropriate and sort of indicated to me that there wasn't a good understanding by BART, by the officers or the department and its management around how to deal with these kinds of crowds and protests. And clearly, given that there's always crowds and given that there could continue to be protests, it's an area that really does need to be better addressed.
Okay, and one technical question. In the report, you refer to Zone 1, Zone 2, Zone 3, or 4. Most of us probably don't know what those zones are, so maybe we could have that elucidated. So, all right, thank you very much. And Madam General Manager, we will get an appointment on the docket.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. All right, our next and last panel is the implementation of the new oversight entities for BART Police. And I think we have Ms. Kidd, who's on the review board, vice chairperson, and Mr. Smith, the police auditor, and Mr. Perez Velez from the Citizen Review Board Chairperson, and Douglas Hambelt-Blitton, Citizen Review Board. So welcome. So I'd like to just go over the civilian oversight that was established. The Noble Report had made, in part, some of the following major recommendations: that all appeals should stop at the general manager, that the independent police auditor and members of the Citizen Review Board should not be police officers or former police officers, that the BART Board should not appoint the Citizens Review Board directly, and that regular and consistent training must be provided to the Citizen Review Board members. So if you can keep that in mind, and again, full disclosure, I agree with the Noble recommendations, but the legislation that I authored was even stronger, just so that you know. And if we wanted to start with you, sir, about the general state of things, I know that the police auditor was looking for an office at the time of the second shooting, and so it's probably taking some time to get on your feet. And again, that's understandable on our part, but it's also frustrating on our part too. So perhaps the new police auditor might want to tackle that. There you are.
Sure, I'll be happy to start. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to address the Committee on Public Safety today. My name is Mark Smith, and it has been 3 months since I began my tenure as BART Independent Police Auditor. The Office of the Independent Police Auditor, or OIPA, remains squarely in its infancy, particularly in light of the fact that it was not yet operational prior to my arrival. With that said, much important work has already been done to develop the office in such a way as to ensure conformance with the mandates of the citizen oversight model adopted by the BART Board of Directors. And I'm continuously developing and refining a roadmap for the office in order to make it both effective and efficient in serving the people of the Bay Area. One of the primary functions I've been committed to in my first few months has been facilitating the development of the Citizen Review Board, or CRB, which along with the OIPA is the second crucial and new body created as a part of BART's oversight system. I'm very pleased that some members of the CRB are indeed here today to give you their own accounts of the CRB's role in the oversight system and of their activities thus far. And I do think it's well worth mentioning, at least in my opinion, you may be fully aware of this, of their volunteer status as members of the CRB, the time that they devote to the meetings, to the oversight system, and also to being here today. And I certainly appreciate their presence here. Much like the OIPA, CRB was not yet operational prior to my arrival at BART a few months ago. The aftermath of the BART Police Department's, or BPD's, officer-involved shooting on July 3, 2011, it was deemed crucial that the CRB get up and running with all due speed so that it could begin performing its role as a representative and a mouthpiece for the public. I therefore focused my efforts heavily on this responsibility. I'm pleased to report that the CRB now holds regular meetings open to the public, is finalizing a set of bylaws to document its own internal policies and procedures, and responded rapidly and meaningfully when requested to do so by the BART Board of Directors in order to give input on a district-wide question of policy regarding the interruption of cellular service. Importantly, the CRB has also created subcommittees to develop an internal regimen of continuous training, as well as to make appropriate efforts to publicize itself and its activities to anyone who might be interested. Just as I have done with the CRB, I have focused my efforts on working closely with each of the subcommittees I'm referring to in their inaugural meetings. I look forward to seeing the fruits of that labor in the very near future. Another primary focus for the OIPA has been its own efforts at outreach. I've spent the entirety of my professional career in the field of law enforcement oversight. I consider it nothing short of a valuable service to any community that interacts with a police force. This service is largely muted, however, if the community does not have sufficient information about how to take advantage of it and how the oversight system will work. Therefore, I have initiated a program to relaunch the OIPA to the public. I've begun this program by holding meetings with a number of important stakeholders around the Bay Area, including members of the Oscar Grant Foundation, other local police oversight professionals, and the San Francisco chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. I've scheduled additional meetings with the ACLU of Northern California and People United for a Better Life in Oakland, known as Pueblo, and I welcome the opportunity to meet with anyone who has a concern about oversight of the BART Police Department. Also, I have developed a webpage for the OIPA on the BART website. I'm currently exploring the creation of an OIP website that will be independent of BART's site. And I have drafted an OIPA complaint form that is separate from the one currently available from BPD, which the chief mentioned earlier. Furthermore, I've called upon the resources of the Media Affairs Department at BART to explore a multitude of additional outreach methods, which may include contact with media outlets, availability of literature about the OIPA in strategic locations, and very importantly, social media opportunities. A third focus for the OIPA has been learning the operations of both BPD and of BART itself, and establishing healthy working relationships. In any situation where there is a call for effective oversight of a substantial agency such as BART Police Department, compiling a deep level of knowledge about the operation of that agency is a crucial step that must be taken. Also, in any such situation, the process of compiling relevant knowledge necessarily includes a learning curve. For the OIPA, the learning has included, for example, tutorials on the network of closed-circuit television cameras that run throughout the BART system, ongoing reviews of BPD's policies and procedures manual, and directly working with the BPD Internal Affairs Department to establish an effective line of communication. It's worth noting here that the communication with the BART Police Department's Internal Affairs in the early stages of our working relationship has been excellent. Credit is due to those at BPD who have played a role in supporting that effective communication thus far. Looking forward, I have set strategic goals for the OIPA in the areas of implementing an alternative dispute resolution program for complaints against BPD, crafting recommendations to improve certain BPD policies, solidifying my understanding of and working relationship with BPD's Internal Affairs Department, and continuing a program of community outreach for the OIPA. With all of those goals in consideration, the most important next step will be hiring a staff for the OIPA, and in particular, hiring a full-time investigator. I've been working closely with BART's Human Resources Department to develop an appropriate job listing, screen applicants for qualifications, and create a practical exam to be administered to those applicants who qualify. After a good deal of such work, I'm pleased to say that we've received upwards of 150 total applications for the one investigator position. We will soon be ready to schedule our first qualifying candidates from that list for testing and interviews. In the meantime, I'm also presently working toward establishing a service agreement with an oversight professional who I'll be able to call upon if additional resources are needed at any particular time to carry out the responsibilities of the OIPA. As I've mentioned previously, the OIPA and the oversight system as a whole are very much in their infancies, and there's still a great deal of work to be done to establish a system that will meet the mandates set out by the BART citizen oversight model. However, much has also been accomplished over the past few months. Many more positive developments are on the horizon. I look forward to continuing my role in the development of this system and to providing the level of service to the people of the Bay Area that I firmly believe they deserve. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you very much. Now, and I appreciate your comments and the efforts that you've made. Of course, my druthers would have been that all that was accomplished. So you do have an office now.
I have a physical office. I'm awaiting a staff, but I'm looking forward to it very much.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about, too, about there's no staff yet.
You're looking at the staff so far.
Yeah, that's troubling. I mean, I know we can only work so many miracles in a day. My concern is, you know, since it's still a very hot issue and there still have been, during the storm of controversy around the shooting, then there were other judgment calls made that we don't need to dwell on, but added to the mix, the cell phones, the scripted press conferences, et cetera. Let me give you a situation right now. If there was some kind of incident tomorrow, God forbid, involving use of force in any manner, whether fatal or not, do you feel prepared look at it deliberately, or are you going to rely on internal affairs? You know, in other words, I think the real question is how independent are you going to be? Not you as a person, but how independent is going to be? And what commitment do we have from the general manager and the police chief that they will work with you? So far we got lip service, fine. But in practice, you know, in fairness to you, we're all a little worried about that.
I think you asked a couple of questions there. Always. One is with regard to independence. I feel very confident. I'm not sure I would be in this role or taking this position if I didn't feel that I would be, the Office of the Independent Police Auditor would be wholly independent. I believe the model that was set up and that was adopted does provide for that independence. As I mentioned, we're in the very start of our working relationship with BART Police Department. But for one example that I can point to is the recent officer-involved shooting of July 3rd. My role so far has been to monitor the ongoing investigation. And you mentioned yourself that investigation that's being led by the San Francisco Police Department is not yet complete. However, in the meantime, I set up a process immediately after that shooting occurred to make sure that I had a mirror image of everything that Internal Affairs has. They don't know anything that I don't know. That was crucial to me. I want to solidify, as I mentioned what I said, the working relationship and the transfer of information so that we have a set process to rely on. We didn't necessarily have a chance to do that, as if you don't count orientation, I think I'd been at work for 1 to 2 days when it happened. However, on that incident, regardless of whether we had a chance to set up our process, it was crucial to me to make sure that I had the information that I needed immediately. And my commendation to them was that there was no hesitance in making that happen, and that I felt very positive about. And I'm trying to think of the second sort of line of question you had. If I recall correctly, it was with regard to resources. The best that I can do is report to you what's moving so far. I was provided, and very happy to have been provided, with a part-time, I'm sharing, a staff assistant that's helping me get things done. It's an extra pair of hands that's been crucial, frankly. That position will be filled permanently. It's more important to me to make sure I get my investigator position filled permanently, and we're working on that. And again, looking forward to interviews beginning very soon. But you mentioned one other thing as well. Some of the judgments that were made in the meantime, I'd like to deal more with the judgments that really affect the oversight system and my office rather than some things regarding cell phones or other policies like that. One of the judgments that was made was that it was indeed crucial for the Citizen Review Board to get up and running immediately. It was made clear to me that that needed to happen, and I took that challenge on. Whereas I spent hours, days, and weeks trying to make sure that that happened and working with these good folks to try to make sure that they were ready to perform their role, that's a little bit less time that you can spend on, again, developing a job listing, screening candidates, and doing hiring. Yeah. It's hard to balance them all, but we're working on
it. I totally respect your position. And again, you know, fully disclosed here, this setup was not what I wanted. And there are downsides to police auditors that we've seen it, you know, they're vulnerable to, you know, counterintuitive, so to speak, decisions from on high. So I see your limitations. I mean, I certainly feel your commitment. But I wanted to look at it in context as well. And could we, in my mind, back to this infamous, notorious legislation that I wrote, might have served these situations better. In terms of the distractions with the cell phone and the all that mishigas, I think you should be kept in the loop, regardless if the decision is someone else. It's about, you know, non-use of force. And I hope that you're not the last person to find out about these things. And from some of the comments I've seen on TV from the president of the BART board, as well as the new general manager, I have a little bit of hope that that's, you know, you're not going to be, as the auditor, out of that loop on some of those things that may not directly look like a police policy, but definitely affect it. Nothing happens in a vacuum. Assemblywoman.
Thank you, Chair. I know it was spelled out in the legislation, but I just, part of the independence of a position like yours is the reporting relationship. And who do you directly report to?
I report directly to the BART Board of Directors.
And the hire, were you direct hire of the board or direct hire of the general manager?
Direct hire of the board.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Ma'am?
Yes. Good morning. This is an honor for me to be a part of this panel. My name is Sharon Kidd, and I'm the Vice President of the BART Citizen Review Board. Since my appointment, I have been instrumental in assisting both Mark and George, the chairperson, in organizing and launching the board. However, I strongly advocate, as many others do, that the Citizen Review Board will be an enormous asset to the local communities, BART Board of Directors, as well as BART Police. Bridging the gap between the local communities and BART Police is a top priority for me, as demonstrated by my commitment to not only the Citizen Review Board, but as the Oakland Police Department, where I served as a special task, for 7+ years. In lieu of the recent protests and issues pertaining to BART Police, and in particular to police-involved shootings, I believe that the CRB has addressed each matter with the highest levels of competency and integrity. Having served on the Berkeley Police Review Commission for 5 years consecutively, the proper resolution of these issues require extensive investigations, meetings, and resources in order to properly address the conflict and keep the public updated with pertinent public information. The primary focus of the board is to generate awareness about the availability of a forum where citizens can air and file complaints, review BART policies, learn about current updates, and offer suggestions for new policies that will be beneficial to BART's Board of Directors in the community. I am happy to say that I will have my first BART ride-along on October 7th, 2011, and to plan to continue this event on a monthly basis. BART ride-alongs will allow the community to get to know me, as well as provide me with a method to educate the local residents through handouts, trifolds, posters, etc., about the purpose and goals of the Citizen Review Board. I look forward to my first ride-along, as well as the continued growth of BART Citizen Review Board and the board's position in the local communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. So do you feel right now you're getting the amount and kind of information that you would need to make a decision? Do you feel all the doors are open to you and the information has been forthcoming?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. And then I think that's all for now, but I really appreciate you being here. And next member, Mr. Perez-Velez, you're a member of the Citizens Advisory Board.
Yeah, I'm the chair. I'm going to talk a little after. You have my my prepared speech for the record. I like to address some things that I heard today, because some of them are really concerned. I think the BART board, and it's a thin line for me to travel here because I was appointed, and I'm very happy to serve after serving in Berkeley for 7 years as a chair and vice chair as well. It was a little bit reactive instead of a little bit proactive. I mean, it took the death of Mr. Hill for them to really get everything going. And then it took a process for even us to be sad and then actually meet for the first time. Having said that, I think it's moved in the right direction, but it was definitely reactive. I do have some concerns, some things that you said about the use of tasers in the incremental use of force by the BART Police Department. How does that relate to the use of the SFPD if they actually have tasers or do not have now? But they have a mutual aid pact. So how does they react when the BART Police Department has that as part of the rules that they have to follow, incremental use of force, but San Francisco Police Department does not? That's something that has to be looked at really, really closely. You talked about the use of curse words, but discourtesy is an allegation that is always very visible in the city of Berkeley in terms of complaints against police officers. And that goes back to my next point. There is an allegation forms. There hasn't been meetings yet on how do we formulate allegations and how those allegations are written. How do we reach that conclusion? I would have to digress and not agree with an independent auditor. If there was an incident right now, I don't believe the office will be ready. There is an investigator, so all the information will be coming from someplace else. There isn't the ability for the department to have two, three different people to vet their own ideas and to vet their own conclusions to independent investigation. That does not exist. So we are in the infancy. A lot of different things have to happen in order for us to be effective and to gain credibility with the community, which right now is one of the bigger things that I see as a challenge for us. We don't have any kind of visibility on the BART board at all, in the BART board internet. At the bottom says the modernity, the agency model, and that's it. There isn't something that people can go to, click on that name. In the city of Berkeley, you have that. The Berkeley Police Review Commission does exist. It's a different website. All the information is there, PDF files, how to file a complaint, who are the commissioners, when they meet. None of that exists unless you go to the agenda and look for the specific topics. So it is a big hurdle. I mean, right now we're caught up in bylaws. We're caught up in possible training things that we're going to do. But the work is extensive. And being a community volunteer board, it is not so easy to get everybody together to work as hard as we'll have to do to be not so reactive, just a little more proactive.
And then what about information? Are you feeling you're getting information that's timely and accurate? Or do you have to read about it in the paper, like me?
Well, to be, you know, in the last meeting of the CRB, there some members brought up the idea of writing a letter to the San Francisco Police Department demanding some answers about the status of the investigation. The conversation was really lengthy, but at the end result was that we're not even empowered to do that directly. We have to do it through the BART Board of Directors. So there isn't a lot of information coming. I mean, I'm going to refer back to other jurisdictions and their policies. 50 members of the public can come up and generate the ability to do a complaint. We do not have a complaint or a witness to the complaint in this incident in San Francisco, so it doesn't exist. So our hands are tied. So there is a lot of different things that have to be within that legislation or even the oversight model to make it a little more effective. The information from BART is very forthcoming, is very, very friendly, is on time, because I think they do realize the need for the CRB to work in conjunction with a new chief of police to make the department better and more responsive.
Yeah, I mean, one would hope that the BART board, would recognize many of the things you're saying. And believe me, I understand you were appointed. But, you know, if the Citizens Review Committee, even with this rather limited context of police auditor, et cetera. You know, if you can't make constructive criticism, then, you know, that goes to my point of why are we doing this if it's not working? And I understand there'll be, diversity of opinion on the Citizens Review Board. That's why we have. It's not supposed to be pretty. But I think if there's not the basic trust there and if there's if politics reign over judgment, that makes it very uncomfortable for you, very uncomfortable for all of us. One of the things, thinking of the auditor themselves, that not unlike many regions of urban regions of the country, we have tremendous diversity, and there is a digital divide as well. You know, to say to some people it's on the website, that's like saying, here's Obama's number, give him a call, he'll pick it up. And, you know, I would urge you, the auditor, and, you know, to really push for that. And the more public scrutiny, the better. I'm elected. I kind of know what the pressures are, an elected official. Even if the board were to repeat its negligent history and go for something that maybe was not, shall we say, a popular decision, the more scrutiny that they're under, and, you know, like both of us, it's uncomfortable, but we welcome it. You know, it's one of those that, you know, good. You know, they're only as good as the information that they can get, and that it's an independent information, too, not coming from, some unwanted pressure. Maybe you're not going to have the tenure that you thought. Maybe we'll rescind your appointment. I'm not saying any of that could happen, but I think people need to be aware about what the prescriptions are in the current legislation. People might think, oh, there's a citizen review board. Fine, that takes care of it. But no, it's in this context. So true independence isn't really there, in my viewpoint. That could be compensated for if there is transparency and there is accountability. In terms of the San Francisco police investigation, it's both a blessing and a curse because, we got to wait for them. We can't get it. I'm not empowered to get that information. But, it is public information, that part of it that's appropriate. And, any citizen can do that. I just wouldn't want any of the members of the Citizens Advisory Committee to feel like if I do this, I'm going to get in trouble. If I do this, if you're not getting the information and if you're being stonewalled, regardless of how new everybody is, that is your civic duty.
If I could say something for the
I'm
record.
I'm not lecturing you, but I'm just saying that's how I see it.
Yeah, if I could say something for the record, because I just presented myself to the BART Board of Directors last Thursday, and they're really very open to the conversation, and they're actually quite energetic about the fact that CRB exists. I think that they see the CRB as a vehicle for positive change. I think they see it as a balance between the community and their elected positions. And, coming from board members like Annette Sweet and Tom Rudalovich, there is quite a lot of excitement about what this CRB can bring to the table. So I don't want to give the impression that they're stonewalling as much as...
I'm saying from my experience, and the reason we're here is because the BART Board of Directors were neglectful. And I'll just say it, and the previous police chief, is he even around anymore? And, all that had to happen with sanctions. And as a general matter, sitting here knowing what I'm talking about, because the buck will stop there. So it's fine now that people have come to Jesus thing about this issue. But the thing is, they didn't do anything for many, many years. This is not your battle. This is my frustration. So, now that they're championing it, okay, fine. But I want more than lip service. I want the real thing. I want accountability. If we have to live with this legislation as written, then I want the optimum. So, Assemblywoman, anything?
As you can see, our chair feels strongly, and I think that clearly the issues of things like having it in an obvious place on the website, that if there's a process for citizen complaint, nobody should have to go to a lot of trouble for that. So that's a very important one. And then to clarify these kinds of communication lines so that the board has the ability because you can have a circumstance where it's another police department investigating in the future, because as we know, each BART station is in a different jurisdiction, so it has both the jurisdiction of BART and the jurisdiction of whatever city or county is located. So we could have this, we could face this obviously many times in the future, and I think having the board having the ability to directly communicate to those other investigative agencies is probably a good thing and probably doesn't need a legislative fix. It's probably something that the board could easily fix. And certainly the board may want to put some kinds of boundaries on it, but meaning the BART board may want to put some boundaries on the type of communications or the type of requests that could be made, but certainly you want to have some ability to do them directly and not to have to wait till the board of directors meets.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for inviting us. My name is Douglas Hambleton, and in the interest of full disclosure, as you mentioned earlier, I don't agree with everything that's in the Noble report. One significant item has to do with former law enforcement officials serving on the board. I'm the retired chief of police at the city of Berkeley, and I've had more years of experience with civilian review than almost anybody, perhaps. I had the pleasure back in, I think it was 1972 or 1973, when I was a student at Cal, of actually being in a position of being able to vote for the Citizens Initiative that created Berkeley's Police Review Commission. I went on to become an officer in the Berkeley Police Department and worked my way up to the ranks, and at the end of my career, my last 4.5, almost 5 years, I served as a chief of police in the Berkeley Police Department. I've had many years of experience with civilian review. I support civilian review very strongly. I think that civilian review has been a good thing for the Berkeley Police Department. It was a good thing in my career. And when I was chief, I tried very hard to work with our civilian review panel. I also believe very firmly in accountability and that officers need to be held accountable. There needs to be a strong discipline process that holds officers accountable. But I also believe that the accountability goes all the way up through the chain of command, and the ultimate accountability of a police department rests on the shoulders of the chief of police. My attitude when I was chief of police was that if I didn't do my job properly and if I wasn't running the discipline process in that department well, that I was going to get I was going to be fired. And my attitude and the attitude of my city manager was that if the city manager wasn't doing his job or her job properly, then they were going to get fired. And that really, to me, is the ultimate accountability, ultimate police accountability, and police chiefs and city managers in the case of cities or in the case of a BART district, the general manager, I think they have to know that that's the consequences of not doing their job properly and not instituting a strong discipline process and good accountability within their organization. I think if you look at what's happened in the BART agency, we have some new people in those positions, and that's not by happenstance. And I suspect that the general manager and the chief know that their jobs are on the line if they don't do their jobs properly. And I see the civilian review process and us on this board as contributing to that process. You know, ultimately, we help hold them accountable by reviewing what's going on in terms of discipline in the department, reviewing what goes on in terms of the policies and procedures of the department, and making public statements about that in our meetings. And we also were all appointed by members of the BART, elected members of the BART board, and we have a relationship with the people who appointed us, and we have their ear, and we can communicate with them. So up to this point, I think the system that is in place has the potential of being very good for the BART Police Department. Well, we will see how it plays out. I think that's crucial, is how it plays out over the next year or so as we really start doing our work. We've just started, and we're not to the point where I can say, oh, it's working great, because, again, we've just started. There's some things that I'm very impressed with from what Chief Rainey had said earlier. I'm very impressed with his cooperative attitude towards us. I'm very impressed with what he's done in terms of the revisions of policy, completely revising the department policy manual in really a very short period of time. I'm also very impressed with his commitment to training. I'm very impressed with the BART board's commitment to the training and that they've funded the kind of training program that he's been able to do. Very few police departments. I don't know any police department that has the resources to provide the kind of training to their officers that BART has been able to do. So I'm very hopeful of these first steps. But I think the proof, as they say, the proof is going to be in the pudding. I think over the next year or so, as we really get into the meat and potatoes of reviewing policies and seeing that what their response is to our suggestions, and also as we get in the meat and potatoes of examining complaints, examining the discipline that's being imposed and being a part of that process, we will see how well it's working.
Yeah, and I'm impressed, but I don't know yet, frankly. And, you know, you're a man of substance and great experience, and, you know, I would defer to you on many, many things in terms of law enforcement that, you know, basically I have a layman's knowledge. But, you know, that layman's knowledge is important, too, because it's the kind of lens that people look at. It's the kind of basis of assessment that's, okay, you know, I'm not quite with this, but I trust you. And, you know, I do feel historically there's been a betrayal of the trust of the community. And, you know, with all due respect to you, I don't really think you have a place on the Citizens Advisory Committee. And I don't mean that in any way to diminish you. It's just like I shouldn't be on God knows what panel. I would prefer not. I would prefer that we defer to your advice as a citizen. But you know, we did recommend, and the recommendation was, and we'll just respectfully disagree with, you know, nobody who was a police officer or police officer on it. On the surface, it seems counterintuitive to some from the law enforcement agency, and that's why we had bloodshed around this legislation last year. And I do defer to Assemblywoman Skinner's opinion, too, that it may not always need a legislative fix. In fact, I would almost prefer that, you know. So I'm only one guy that has to be convinced. But, you know, there are other members who are concerned who do have transit systems in their cities with various expressions of enforcement. Some of them are private security firms. I'm not with that at all, but I'm just saying that there are options, some for BART as well to look at. I also believe and think if you're a cop and a good cop like I know you are, you're always ready to think on your feet because you've had that experience. I think, you know, minus the training and plus the newness of many of the BART officers, they don't have that benefit. That's what I meant about the mentoring. Because while we are having committee meetings, et cetera, this reminds me of when I was on the Golden Gate Bridge District Board discussing whether or not we should have a suicide barrier. As we discussed that year after year after year, people were jumping as we were talking. So you don't want, as we're discussing the proof of the pudding, et cetera, and so forth, parsing the various policies, I don't want another shooting, you know. And I know nobody can guarantee me that, you know, no one. None of us are God. But, you know, what are we doing as we're planning, you know, and how hands-on is everyone going to be? And are we going to have the same strong feelings after we're a little depleted for, you know, reports and all that? I don't know. I really don't know. I want the fire in the belly from the citizens' review. I want the fire in the belly from the BART directors, certainly from the new manager and police chief. Yeah, there is hope. There's definitely hope. It's just that it's not guaranteed. And anything that I can do as chair of public safety to minimize that uncertainty, I'm pledged to do. Assemblywoman.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, panelists, for being here and joining us and for the work that you're doing. In full disclosure, I supported Chair Almiano's legislation, and I supported it because I was more comfortable with the model that City of Berkeley has used for police review and the City of San Francisco has used. That said, the legislation that passed is what passed, and it's the model that you all are using. And so I'm, in terms of the as an absolute, whether I feel it's, you know, absolutely not good to have either a current or former member of law enforcement on such a panel, I'm somewhat agnostic. I think my perspective was more on other aspects of the structure of how the City of Berkeley police review works and how San Francisco's police review works that, you know, was my preference. But we are where we are. And what not to get too much into editorials, of course, it's water under the bridge, but I think that BART clearly would have been far better served to have had police review much earlier on, because let's just take the City of Berkeley, which is my hometown and which I served on the council of, and we have here as part of the commission, you know, clearly members who have had a great deal of experience in both directly in the police force but also with the Police Review Commission. And now, does the City of Berkeley have fewer incidents because of it? Who's to say? But then again, one can say that because partly everything in life is around sort of the corporate culture that we establish. And because of the existence of the citizen review, I think it did affect the corporate culture of our department and our city. Now, many other factors also affected that. But I think that while I know that our over the years, both members of the Berkeley police officers, the police force, and chief have had frustrations with our police review commission, certainly that is natural. But I think that just, again, it's that issue of a corporate culture that was established for a very long time that I think has affected where, if we compare just a whole variety of indicators and we compare a number of different police forces in the Bay Area and the City of Berkeley's police force, and you just find that fewer of those indicators are present in, that the corporate culture has worked well. It has worked well in minimizing incidents, in creating a much healthier relationship between the community and the police, and a whole variety of things. And obviously, City of Berkeley is, well, we have a very large homeless population, a very large mentally ill population. We have the student, we have a trans, you know, the student population. We've got crowds. We're one of the densest cities in the Bay Area. So we've got all of the kinds of things that BART police officers have to deal with, though obviously not the daily crowds in every circumstance. And yet our community and our police have managed to avoid a lot of circumstances that unfortunately the BART system has not avoided, and has also managed to have a healthier relationship. So I think that corporate culture has benefited. And I think that what Chair Amiano's expression of frustration is that he has been wanting this in a long time in coming. So I think what we all want is for your presence, both the auditor and the commission's presence, to help BART establish a new corporate culture around its public safety, around its relationship to the community around public safety, and around its relationship to ridership and that. So that's what we want to support you in doing, and I think that's really the purpose of this oversight hearing, and we will continue our monitoring role since it was established by legislation, but we're also here to be of assistance in any time that whether it's, you know, publicly or privately, we can be of assistance. You have our commitment to do so and be so.
Okay, well said. I want to thank you all for your service, and we'll definitely be in contact. Thank you so much. I wanted to open it up for public comment. How many people wanted to speak in public comment? Okay, why don't you come to the table, and we'll give you all a couple of minutes. And this is a public comment of one oversight hearing. There'll be plenty of opportunity for further public comment and input. That's why we're here. And I will say, in the amount of time to be determined, I would like to have another kind of report back oversight hearing. And again, that will be determined. So, sir, would you like to start?
Did you want to start?
Or would you like to? Okay. So we have a couple of minutes.
I won't be long.
No, thank you.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say it's nice to see you again. And I really applaud your efforts and the efforts of the board to hold BART accountable. I remember being in a meeting with you on your bill, and I supported it then, and I still support your bill. I never support it, even though I sat and went through all the motions with them developing that. I never supported it. So I just wanted to applaud you on that. I want to really talk about the oversight, because I think one of the oversight members cleared everything up on getting the truth out about the oversight. But what I wanted to share is about training. And I actually participated in a training that I was invited to. And I know that the one time that Oscar Grant's mother came to a BART board meeting in the midst of all the pain, that she really asked BART if they could really just train the officers so it would not happen again. And so when it happened again, it was very devastating, because these things has to be put in place. But I'll just share briefly about my training that I experienced with BART. There was a trainer, and he was talking about this club called Country Boogie. See, there's a mindset that has to be broken, and if you don't break it, it just is not training. What are you training for? So he says, oh, there was this nice club called Country Boogie. He said all these nice people came. He showed people pictures of older Caucasians doing the square dancing, and you know they would come every week and they would have a good time, and then they would drink. And then he said, well, what happens? He said, what happens is that the owner got into some trouble, so he sells it, and now it becomes just Boogie. And then so he says, so what happened? Now we have stabbing, we have murders, the police is coming out every week. And he puts up this record of how many calls that the police had when it became just Boogie. And so I asked him, well, you're going to tell me you have alcohol on both occasions and the police never came? Because when people drink, they get crazy. You cannot predict, especially if they drink too much. I say it's not fair for you to put that up there when it's Boogie, and you don't put the statistics when it's Country Boogie. So all I want to say is training. I mean, that's, you have to have proper training. You can train all you want, but if it's the same systemic mindset, then you're just spinning your wheels. And that's all I wanted to share.
Thank you very much, sir.
Hello. My name is David, and I report for IndieBay.org. I'm familiar with your communications director, Quentin. We've spoken on a number of occasions. I'm speaking now because I've personally become a part of this story. While I understand your hesitance to revisit legislation, I personally think it might come to that because I think there are issues bigger than training. BART tends to act a lot of times as if it is its own country because it's not accountable to a city council or a mayor. You know, I've been to hearings here before, but they tend to be somewhat infrequent, and I do appreciate you holding this hearing. I think it's important. BART's board of directors is part-time, so they don't properly oversee what goes on there. A lot of times they're just rubber-stamping financial decisions, which is their job. I'm concerned about some of the culture that's still going on right now. The police department, prior to August 11th, sent out an email asking for good or bad, constitutional or unconstitutional solutions to dealing with protests. I don't feel it's appropriate for the police to be sending out emails asking for unconstitutional solutions. And they've been acting in that regard as well. They've arrested protesters for exercising free speech rights. Myself, I'm a journalist. Pretty much everybody at BART is familiar with me because I've been critical of them for the last 2.5 years. And they actually arrested me under the orders of the deputy chief of BART police. They put me in handcuffs for 3 hours and sent me to 850 Bryant. I believe that that's a big issue. I'll just close with my take on, I've been going to some of the auditor meetings and the citizen review board meetings, and at this point, I don't find the things very encouraging. To me, it seems that they sort of feel more, at your question about independence, that their role is more to act as a PR buffer for BART than it is to take on a confrontational role when appropriate. For instance, in September 2nd meeting, the auditor Mark Smith, when the Civilian Review Board was considering, was requested by a public speaker, not myself, to consider legal ramifications or issues with Chief Rainey's decision to cut off cell phone service. Mark Smith said, no, that's a matter for BART's general counsel. That's not really independence if you're just referring back to the general counsel. I'll go ahead and close with that and just thank you for holding this hearing.
Thank you very much for your participation. And while any legislation, you know, we want to be extremely deliberative about, certainly it is a strong option if there will be future legislation. So, sir?
Yes. I'm Cephas Johnson, Oscar Grant's uncle, and I do want you to know that I really stood in favor of your EB. I think it was 386 at the time. But one of the things I do want to share, actually it was four topics for the sake of time. I'll try to just be as brief as I can. It was four topics. One was, of course, training. One was bias-based policing, racial profiling. The other was community confidence. And the other, of course, was civilian oversight. I'm going to start with civilian oversight because we heard, I think it was Nancy had mentioned about the culture. And my problem is this, is that and I'll read from the original draft from Noble, two, it says, the process of establishing an independent citizen oversight system for BART Police Department should be developed at a pace sufficient for proper planning and should not be established solely because of urgent
and vocal demands of the community. And that community should be X'd out and it should be barred. Because the reason why we have the Oversight Committee form 1586 today was because of a rush to get it passed before January 1st. And knowing what I know now, and understanding the essence of some political moves that are made, I wouldn't have never agreed with that. And I think it passed solely because of somewhat of the family agreeing to just getting something passed without teeth, and then later we'll build upon it. Well, I'm looking at this now as an opportunity to build upon this teethless oversight committee that we have. Because truthfully, that's how I see it. And I do believe that your bill would have brought some policies that truly needs to be established. So now I'm going to flip to training, because it talks about the essence of how important policies are. And the lack of policies, what we have is just cosmetics, making it seem like things are being done without the establishment of policies. Nothing is really being done internally. And so we need some major changes in that regard. So I'm going to go to page 55 of the original draft, again from Myers Noble. And one of the things about training that I saw that was really critical and needed was communicational skills. And I'm looking at this training. The trainings are all rehearsed. It's in a controlled environment. So when something happens that requires real thinking in real life, that training goes out the window. So my thought was, we need unrehearsed training. How do we establish unrehearsed training? Well, someone in the community approaches an officer, a BART police officer, without his knowledge, and bring up some issues that may cause him to react. And we'll see if he's truly trained. Mm. I mean, this, to me, will begin to understand what type of training these officers truly need. Because, as we know, in a controlled environment, the country boogie versus boogie, and the type of training when it comes to taser, confrontation, use of force, is all easily done and look right in a room that's closed off to the community. So it has to be really addressed in the respect of unrehearsed training. And I think BART needs to take a look at that, because David, my colleague, said that when BART can pay for scripted rehearsing to make their appearance look good, then we got issues. Now, I have to say, I have a relationship with Chief Rainey, and he's a very great chief policeman. Personally, I truly like him, and I believe in his heart he wants to make changes. I've come to know Rod, who is BART public relations officer, who has really communicated with the family and has worked with the family. You know, and then, of course, the new general manager had just sent out word that she would like to meet me personally. So I believe that there are real good intentions, but we're dealing with a culture, an organization that needs to be changed from top to bottom in its culture perspective. And this, I can run on with this, but this thing about wanting to look good to the community at all costs is shameful. And many times, it gets caught in it, and it builds that distrust with the community again. So if I move on to bias policing, bias-based policing and racial profiling, Myers Noble had put this out, and I thought this was really significant, 122. And matter of fact, I heard you talk about it earlier, and it's data. Okay. I'm going to read. BART Police Department was unable to provide data which captures and identifies all police contact, time, date, location, vehicle, pedestrian, consensual or non-consensual. The limited data provided indicates a disproportionate number of traffic contacts with African-American and Hispanic-Americans. However, comparing only race data severely limits the opportunity to calculate the multiple correlations between and among factors associated with traffic stops and field investigation. You know, that's because it says here from Myers Noble Current application and practice, BARC Police Department does not currently have a racial profiling policy in effect for the department to adhere to, nor in the history of the department have they had one. And so I didn't hear earlier if there was one established since this draft, and still to my knowledge, I don't believe there is one. And so here we go. You know, in order for an organization that has the shameness that BARC has, there has to be policies established. And I'm truly believing now AB 386 would have laid down some policies that BARC would have had to adhere to that would have really brought more assurance that a possible shooting by mistake or by profiling or biased policing wouldn't have happened. And so that is my concern. Again, with the citizen-civilian oversight, what teeth does it have to help bring about the policies that are needed to bring about these changes? And, of course, that's right now in suspect. I'm in total agreement, and it's shameful that, you know, and it's no disrespect to the individual that was an ex-police officer, but it's my position. He should not be on the board or the committee. That's my position. I don't know how he slipped in there. You know, that's another aspect of the story. But as a family member and in hoping that the community can come with this unbiased policing training and maybe even belief that all police officers are good, should not taint the committee. That's my personal belief. You know, and there's no disrespect to the individual because he may be one of those good officers, but sad to say, right now the perception is there's not many good ones, even though we know there is, but because the bad ones has been able to just do what they want, it makes all of them look bad, and so it raises the question. Yep. And I go to this very last one, which is the community confidence. And I think David elaborated on very well, and that was when it can get out, like you said, and I've heard you say, we hear it on the news, that BARC will go pay for scripted people to come and share their opinion in a more positive light for BARC as an organization. It's shameful. And it totally discredits BARC and its ability to really show itself as being an organization about change and for the betterment of the community. You know, and so I think I'm going to want to close with that. Oh, I do have one other part that I'll share that to me was needs to be addressed, and I think it still needs to be addressed today because it could become a real major issue later. When the protesting are taking place, no BARC employee outside of the BARC police force should touch an individual in the crowd. That should be an absolute no. Termination, no questions asked. And by looking at the news and seeing a BARC employee grabbing an individual, though he may have climbed up on top of the BARC, you know what I'm saying? But if he had pulled that individual down, that individual fell and cracked his head open and died. Another shameful act on BARC's part. Yes, he may not have should have been up there, but BARC was wrong for allowing that employee to just do and become a hero as if he was becoming a hero by saving BARC. You know, and so I think I will close with that. There's much more I can talk about. I do have one individual who couldn't be here, but he wanted to share his sentiment concerning this public safety meeting that we're having, if we can.
Do you have a statement?
Yes.
Yeah, no problem.
And excuse me for getting a little excited, but, you know.
Are you kidding? I welcome it.
Give me a minute. It's coming on.
Oh, it's coming on.
Okay. It's on.
Okay. Technology.
And I do thank you for having this today. You know, it's sad that I got the word late, but I made it a point to be here because it's really important that we take a look at the progress that has been made since the Oscar Grant shooting, especially with the recommendation from Noble as well as Myers and Nave. And again, I think that cosmetically there is some stuff that has been changed, but internally there's much work to be done.
I think, you know, in regard to your nephew and to the others and the BART police, we are pledged to respect those memories, and we don't want it to happen again. And it is very possible in a system like this that things slip between the cracks. And, I mean, I commend you because it really is a duty of the populace to say to us, you're on the right track, but you're going this way. You do have a mental, you know, if you have a mindset about a certain ethnic group, that is going to creep in to your actions. And so if there's not a policy around that, we're going to see the country boogie, the boogie. It's really a wonderful analogy because people get it right away. But it's very deep. It's very, very deep. Okay, for this statement.
And for the statement, this is from Minister Keith Muhammad, who had been at many of the BARC meetings. So he shares here, the recent shooting of Charles Hill in San Francisco brings us face to face with the attempted reform of BART police and its system of oversight. We learned with Oscar Grant murder by BART officer Johannes Mesley that police do not investigate themselves and report themselves for crime committed on duty. This is why I, after spending hours in committees with BART board members to develop a system of oversight, I'm greatly disappointed to learn that a month after the killing of Charles Hill, its review board is still waiting to take action. The role of the independent auditor was to include the ability to conduct a fully independent investigation and give findings to the board for review. Has this happened here? It appears that BART police want us to believe an investigation by San Francisco Police Department is an independent investigation. I disagree. We need oversight and investigation outside the authority of local law enforcement. We need a true independent investigation of the facts. We did better in Oakland because the community marched into the office of the district attorney, elected official, and community leaders, cried out for justice, not because the system of justice were friendly, but because the demands of the public could not be ignored. We cannot ignore the need for an independent investigation into the killing of Charles Hill or any other BART passenger. And that was from, again, Keith Muhammad, Minister Keith Muhammad.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody, and particularly Assemblymember Skinner, who has some closing remarks.
Thank you. I really appreciate all of the your presence and your public comment, and I'm very sorry that, especially to you, Mr. Johnson, that these incidents, you will, of course, I lost a sister this year, so I know that our memories about loved ones who pass and their circumstances are continually, they come before us continually, but to have further public incidents force those is particularly hard. So I am sorry that those public incidents continue to happen and you're having to confront that. And I wanted to just express again that clearly Mr. Amiano's legislation, which, as I indicated, I thought was a better piece of legislation, but it was really motivated out of not only that models have worked in the past, but also out of our chair's frustration for the years that he has observed that the corporate culture of BART was not responsive or appropriate, was not designed in the way that I think now most of us would like it to be, or even the Bay Area community as a whole. But I would say now that while the legislation was not successful, and sometimes trying to force such a corporate culture, whether it's legislatively or otherwise, doesn't always work. I think now, clearly the onus is on BART. The onus is on the force itself, on the board, on the new manager, and of course, yes, on the citizen review. But the BART as a whole has the ability, without us forcing them to change its corporate culture. And I think that's what we are expecting. And that's what we are asking for. And it's not easy. And I believe that the chair and others felt that you might have been aided by stronger legislation. And we may, you know, we'll have to see in the future whether that's necessary or not. But you have the power to do it. You have the ability. It's not, it won't happen overnight. But certainly it's something that can happen and is within BART as an organization's ability to do. And I think on this issue of on the training, you know, we live in a very racist culture. We are all, we don't even have to start out thinking that any particular either police organization or corporate organization or whatever is somehow immune from this. It's in our face constantly. It's in, by the nature of our sentencing laws, by the nature of our popular culture, you name it. And so in a funny way, for any of us in any role, whether we're in a legislative role, a public safety role, whatever role, we almost have to be untrained in to, we need to understand how those factors play in. I mean, I'll give you a very specific example. On, as I mentioned, being on the Berkeley City Council for years, Berkeley in the 60s, 70s, and 80s obviously had many riots. Most of those riots were dominantly Caucasian. They were student riots or People's Park riots, and there were some people of color, but very few. Never in that time period, well, I shouldn't say never, in the late 60s and early 70s, when Ronald Reagan sent the National Guard in, there was curfews and such. But after that point, City of Berkeley never considered a curfew. Even though historically on the anniversaries of People's Park, we could expect a riot. When the times when the anarchist convention would occur in San Francisco, we could expect a riot. So pretty much you could guarantee it, but we did not install curfews. It wasn't until the Rodney King incident that then we were asked to put in a curfew. Why? Because there was concern. Never said, but it would be a racial riot. Now, was that any more dangerous? In our previous riots, we had people killed. In our previous riots, we had damage to property. We had fires. We had violence. So, and I was not comfortable instituting a curfew in that instance when I had never been asked to institute a curfew in any other. Now, if it was the City of Berkeley's policy to institute a curfew every time we knew or could expect that there would have been a riot, I probably would have been more open to it. But these kinds of things just are there. They're just there in our culture. And we almost have to relearn to get over them and to function in a way that doesn't bring out just things that... So I hope that that not just hope, I pledge whatever assistance to assist BART in confronting these circumstances that it's facing in improving its relationships with the community and with addressing its corporate culture. And in whatever way we can be helpful, we pledge that.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. The meeting is adjourned.